Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope meets artists. Today saw the much-anticipated meeting between Pope Benedict and over 250 painters, actors, musicians, film directors and other artists from around the world, held in the splendour of the Sistine Chapel. In an address to the gathering, Pope Benedict made an appeal for renewed friendship, dialogue and cooperation between the Church and the world of art, and also spoke of our deep need for authentic beauty, because it brings joy and hope to the human heart. Art and faith. We talked to three of the artists who took part in that meeting: the Canadian pianist Angela Hewitt, the British film director Peter Greenaway, and the German filmmaker Philip Gröning, who share with us their thoughts about this historic encounter and give their views about the relationship between religion and art. And Pope and Anglican leader. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, talks to us in an exclusive interview just after his audience on Saturday with Pope Benedict, their first meeting since the Vatican set up a formal structure making it easier for disaffected Anglicans to convert to Catholicism. An appeal for renewed friendship, dialogue and cooperation between the Church and the world of art, and the need for authentic beauty because it brings joy and hope to the human heart. This, in essence, was the message expressed by Pope Benedict in an address to over 250 artists from all over the world, held in the Vatican's Sistine Chapel on Saturday. The keenly awaited meeting, held against the backdrop of Michelangelo's stunning frescoes, was intended to mark the 45th anniversary of Pope Paul VI's meeting with artists and the 10th anniversary of Pope John Paul's letter to artists. Charles Collins tells us more.
Pope Benedict XVI on Saturday met with over 260 artists from five continents in the Sistine Chapel, offering a reflection on art and beauty.
Dear friends, thank you for your presence here today. Let the beauty that you express by your God-given talents always direct the hearts of others to glorify the Creator, the source of all that is good.
He said that if we acknowledge that beauty touches us intimately, that it wounds us, that it opens our eyes, then we rediscover the joy of seeing, of being able to grasp the profound meaning of our existence. The meeting with artists was meant to reestablish a historic friendship between the Church and the arts, and came on the 10th anniversary of the Letter to Artists by Pope John Paul II. Pope Benedict said art in all of its expressions has the ability to broaden the horizons of human consciousness, and it becomes an avenue to the transcendent, to God.
Il momento attuale è purtroppo segnato, oltre che da fenomeni negativi a livello sociale ed economico, anche da un affievolirsi della speranza.
The Pope noted that this age is seeing a dramatic waning of hope, and that beauty can be a guiding star for happiness. He said the experience of beauty does not remove us from reality. On the contrary, it leads to a direct encounter with the daily reality of our lives, liberating it from darkness, transfiguring it, making it radiant and beautiful. To the artists, he said they should not be afraid to approach the first and last source of beauty, to enter into dialogue with believers who also consider that they are pilgrims in this world and in history towards infinite beauty. He said faith takes nothing away from their genius or their art. On the contrary, it exalts them and nourishes them. It encourages them to cross the threshold and to contemplate with fascination and emotion the ultimate and definitive goal. I'm Charles Collins.
The Those invited to Saturday's meeting in the Sistine Chapel included painters, sculptors, architects, poets, musicians, dancers and film directors from across five continents. Archbishop Gianfranco Ravasi, president of the Pontifical Council for Culture, says the guests were picked regardless of religious, political or stylistic allegiances. And, as you will hear in a few minutes, some of them are even, self-confessed, dyed-in-the-wool atheists. Among those who accepted the invitation were Italian tenor Andrea Bocelli, US actor F. Murray Abraham, Iraqi architect Zaha Hadid, French writer and actress Florence Delay, and Canadian pianist Angela Hewitt. But how did the artists themselves feel about this Vatican initiative? What were the sources of their own artistic inspiration? And how do they view the current relationship between art and faith? Well, to find out more, we spoke earlier to three of the artists invited to Saturday's meeting with the Pope. Let's hear what they had to say. The interludes of Johann Sebastian Bach, played by the world-renowned pianist Angela Hewitt from Canada, who has been hailed as the preeminent Bach pianist of our time. Angela Hewitt has won a string of international piano competitions and has performed throughout the world as a soloist with renowned orchestras and has made many recordings. Of particular note is her 11-year project to record all the major keyboard works of Bach. But her repertoire is wide-ranging, and she has recorded works by many other composers as well, including Couperin, Beethoven, Ravel, Chopin and Schumann. My colleague Irene Lagan spoke to Angela Hewitt just after the meeting with the Pope in the Sistine Chapel and asked for her reaction to the Pope's address.
Yes, I think the most important part of his message today was that we are creators of beauty, we are the guardians of beauty, and that we must transmit that message to everybody. And I think that's a very important one, especially in the world as we have it today. And I know that's what I try to do in my performances, is to lift people's spirits, to take them to another world, to really make a difference in their lives. And I think that's why we're all here today.
Now, you found yourself in the Sistine Chapel, surrounded by Michelangelo's art, listening to some music. How did that impact you?
Well, I don't think there could be a more marvelous place for this, and in the presence of His Holiness. Yes, to hear the choir sing Palestrina, to have beautiful art of Botticelli, Perugino, Michelangelo around you, and people from all over the world. It was a great honor and to be there, but I think we all felt this communion of one goal and one purpose in life.
He also really spoke about the gift that artists have, and you as a musician certainly have a gift. And did you feel a sense of responsibility?
Yes, I do, and I always have. In fact, you're right. The gift that you have comes from God, I believe, and it is a huge responsibility to then put in the work that is necessary to develop that gift. But, you know, what we do is all about communication with other people. As a pianist, I communicate beautiful music, and that's, you know, the contact I have with people and the effects that the music has on them, that's really the most important thing to me. And so I think that we felt being there this morning that our work is even more important than we might have thought before.
You come from a background of faith. How does this faith inform or affect how you perform or how you see your music?
Yes, I grew up a bit in the church. My father was organist and choir master at the Anglican Cathedral in Ottawa, Canada for 50 years. So I always associated, I suppose, music with faith, because hearing all that glorious church music, singing it myself, and now, of course, playing the complete works of Bach, whose great faith is so evident in his music. I think it's wonderful to have a background in sacred music. I think it adds an extra dimension to your interpretations of other music as well. I know many people liken some of my performances of Bach's music, the Goldberg Variations, the Well-Tempered Clavier, to a spiritual experience, and when they do, then I'm very happy to know that.
What did this new collaboration or of artists with the with the church. How will this impact society? I mean, the Pope really spoke also about the interiority that artists have, the capacity to see truth and beauty and goodness. And what impact can this have on society in general?
Well, I think artists have a duty, really, to go out into society and to say, spread the word. I mean, you know, playing for children, for instance, playing in schools. We were just talking with the Italian pianist Roberto Procida, who's involved in a project of giving concerts in hospitals, you know, which I've also done in Canada. And I think that's very important. It's all very well to say, you know, oh, I'm an artist, but unless you share it with the people who need it the most. And also, as I said, especially the young people who have very little of that in their lives now. It's all very materialistic, and we have to start there for future generations.
That was the Canadian pianist Angela Hewitt speaking to Irene Lagan. An internationally well-known artist who accepted the invitation to meet Pope Benedict this weekend was the avant-garde British film director Peter Greenaway, despite being, on his own admission, a dyed-in-the-wool atheist. Trained as a painter, Greenaway's movies are often controversial and go well beyond the boundaries of conventional cinema. His most successful film was The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, released in 1989. In recent years, he has moved into multimedia projects and is currently working on an ambitious series of digital video installations entitled Nine Classical Paintings Revisited. He spoke to me earlier this week about his reactions to this Vatican initiative.
I'm delighted to be able to associate it with an initiative from the papacy to make a link up with contemporary artists.
And how would you define the current relationship between art and faith? I mean, it was once so close. As you say, those stunning frescoes of Michelangelo, which are going to be the backdrop to this meeting, are a reminder of that really close, almost symbiotic relationship between the popes of the Renaissance and art.
You're absolutely right. From the obviously very, very early days, the major patron of the West, I suppose, in its totality, certainly was the Church. And there's an extremely long association which obviously produced some extremely amazing, profound works.
So how easy do you think it'll be for the Vatican to forge a closer relationship with the contemporary artists? As you say, it's had this long collaboration.
I think we could say that, you know, we're no longer in an age of faith, which was certainly the condition throughout the whole of the medieval and post-medieval Renaissance Church, I suppose. Shall we say the 18th century began to create a gap in terms of belief and understanding and ability to communicate between the cutting edge of art, which is always philosophically right at the edge of new ideas and new systems of thinking in the world. So I think probably that really sensible, shall we say, radical concerns of art began to move very far away from those notions of what Roman Catholicism thought was a particular relationship between religion and culture. So the inevitable, I think, how should we say this? Should we say the coruscation or the widening gap between cutting-edge philosophy and the Roman Catholic Church began to increase and increase at such a relationship between notions, I suppose, profound thinking about culture and indeed profound thinkings about Christianity very much separated themselves. But we've all now moved into different sorts of notions about science and belief and philosophy. So maybe there's a different sort of relationship that can be formulated indeed between the Roman Catholic Church as a great patron of the art and contemporary artists.
So you're quite hopeful that maybe relations could get closer then?
Well, we will see. We will indeed depend, I think, very much upon degrees of communication and sophistication. I'm very keen, for example, to meet Monsignor Ravasi, who I understand is a prime mover in these matters, and also the curator of the Vatican Museum, Signor Paolucci. And I hope that maybe we'll be able to create some sort of dialogue to move with great understanding, an enormous act of celebration, I think, in association with this extraordinary, deeply religious work by Michelangelo called The Last Judgment.
And when it comes to your work, is there any kind of religious or spiritual feeling or theme that you feel you want to portray or that runs through it sometimes?
Well, I am a total non-believer, an absolute dyed-in-the-wool atheist, but I don't find that any necessary bar to making a communication to those people, religion and faith. And if we can talk about notions of secular religion, and our bookshops of the world are now full of this debate in great and full flowering, there is every reason to presume that our delight, excitement, and celebration of the world is our common purpose. But there's no particular necessity anymore, I think, to go along the well-channeled notions of, should we say, authenticated, authorized notions of belief. I'm a deeply religious person, but I certainly do not believe in God. Although I do hanker on that rather nice particular axiom, I do not believe in God, but I miss him.
Have you got any particularly significant upcoming projects that you can tell us a little bit about?
We are tackling these 9 paintings. We've now done 3, so there are 6 more to go. And I would like to be able, indeed, to cap this in-depth examination of visual imagery and notions of philosophy and belief with, indeed, being able to hold a dialogue with that extraordinary painting of Michelangelo's Last Judgment. But I'm still a practicing filmmaker. We're about to make a big cinema production about a 16th century printmaker who was very interested in illustrating the Old Testament. I have a project which I want to make about Joseph. That's the second Joseph. That's Mary's husband. Several years ago, I have an 8-year-old daughter who asked me, how come that Jesus had 2 daddies, so I have to be able to explain that. So I've written a film script which we hope to go into production very shortly, which will simply be called Joseph. There are 1 or 2 other associations which might be particularly interesting to our conversation. I'm interested indeed in Christ's 7 miracles, and I want to be able to examine them theologically, but also from the point of view of comparative religions. And we have a series of television programs which I would like to kick off with an examination, indeed, of whether, in fact, the marriage of Cana is still to be regarded in the same perspectives and light now in the 21st century, as was indeed it was painted by all the great painters, not only of the Renaissance, but afterwards. So I'm greatly interested in, I suppose, the vocabularies and perspectives and the theology of examinations of the Old and New Testament. And I have quite a number of projects where I would like to be able to pursue that, to be seen very much through the eyes of the 21st century. And I suppose that I'm very interested to know if the Vatican will hope to be able to pursue these activities, not necessarily through the old, I suppose, established 7 arts, which we're all familiar with, but will actually be able to make an embrace of notions of contemporary artistic expression. Like, for example, the wonders of St. Peter's as a church, created by so many artists, from Michelangelo to Bernini, as a sort of apotheosis celebration of certain beliefs and attitudes, which was an extraordinary work of multimedia.
I was speaking to British film director Peter Greenaway. Another artist who accepted the invitation to meet Pope Benedict this weekend was German film director Philipp Gröning. He achieved international acclaim in 2005 for his prize-winning documentary called Into Great Silence that filmed the daily activities of Carthusian monks who have one of the strictest orders that forbids almost all speech. Gröning lived in a Carthusian monastery in the French Alps for 5 months in order to make the film and shared the monks' privations. Despite being nearly 3 hours long and having barely 2 minutes of dialogue and no added music or soundtrack, this unusual film got rave reviews and played to packed audiences after its release. Gröning spoke to me shortly before the encounter with the Pope in the Sistine Chapel about his feelings on getting this invitation.
I was very surprised, and I was actually very happy about it, and kind of excited. I mean, you don't get invited by the Pope every day. And the reason for accepting it was that I was interested in meeting the Pope as the person, and I was interested in seeing what would happen with a lot of artists in the Sistine Chapel, because that's a very important place for art, and so that intrigued me.
How would you define the current relationship between faith and art, particularly when it comes, say, to the Catholic Church? I mean, it's not as close as it was in the past by any means. And look at the close collaboration, for instance, between the popes of the Renaissance and Michelangelo, for instance. You're meeting under his frescoes.
Well, this is, of course, the reason why this meeting, I think, takes place in the Sistine Chapel, because the collaboration was so close in the past. I would say right now the collaboration is not very close. The distance between the church and the artists has, of course, become bigger in time, although both have definitely the same roots. Arts and religion are coming from the same spring. So I think it's time and it's a good idea to sort of try to mend those relations, try to make them become closer again.
So what do you think is likely to be achieved by this meeting?
Maybe it will achieve that we as artists will talk between each other about how our relations with religion and with the church are, and that this will actually give an inspiration, and that what the Pope will speak to us will also give us an inspiration. I think it may lead to a very fertile dialogue between the church and the artists, but also between the artists themselves. For instance, I know that the filmmaker who did Opera Java is coming, and I'm very excited to meet him. And of course, that will put out energy that people who are working on the same lines and don't know each other yet will meet.
Now, I gather you were brought up as a Catholic. Does this upbringing in any way help to inspire or influence you when you direct and produce films?
I think it does. I mean, as an artist, you work with all of your personality. That's the trick. So investing everything you are means, of course, investing your religious upbringing, your spirituality, your beliefs, and all of that goes into the piece of art. It didn't necessarily have to go in as directly as it did in Integrate Silence, as did some other films which are much more indirectly in their sort of spiritual approach. But I think there's something about wondering what is behind the visible world that is always going through my films, and it's also going through most of the art I know.
You talked there about your most recent film, Integrate Silence, which was about the daily activities of Carthusian monks, and it had virtually no dialogue, and it was nearly 3 hours long. What did you learn by doing this? I mean, what lasting effect did this somewhat unusual film and this experience of filming it have on you?
Well, two major effects, I think. One, living in the monastery, it taught me a lot about actually religion, about faith. It taught me a lot about Catholic belief, not being so much about sin and punishment and confession and so on, but more about faith and trust in God. That was very, very interesting because it showed me a very, very bright side of faith instead of the somewhat more somber side that I knew as a child when it was all about sort of having to confess, being guilty, punishment, and so on, which I think is a common experience when you talk to Almodovar. He grew up in the same kind of Catholicism as I did. And the other thing that's really interesting as an artist, of course, you always hope for something that you do to become very successful. But the great lecture is that the actual joy as an artist is not in becoming famous and making money on it or giving a lot of interview, but the actual joy is always in the work itself. And that was interesting to see, that sort of trying to work on your career, all of that is actually very tiring, whereas creating a work is great.
So how and when did you decide to become a film director? Can you tell us a bit about that?
I decided twice. I decided once when I was 19 and I stood on a corner in São Paulo in Brazil, maybe 18, I think I was 18, and something struck me about the way the traffic moved and the light was between those skyscrapers and the noises were, and suddenly I thought I really want to do that. I really want to capture what is happening in movement in time. And the second decision later on was when I was, I think, 22, and I had, meanwhile, begun to study medicine and psychology, and for some bureaucratic reason, I had to decide between the two of them, and I realized I couldn't take that decision at all, and suddenly I realized that both were wrong, and I wanted to make films.
Is there often a common message or a recurring message that you are trying to get across in your films? What are you trying to tell your audience?
That's very different from film to film, what I'm trying to tell the audience. I think it's boring to repeat the same message. And basically, my films are more like projects of research. I'm trying to find something out. I'm trying to experience something about the world I'm doing the film about, whether I do a fiction or a documentary. So there's no fixed message. I think what's always moving in my mind is the question of how come humans develop a consciousness and that they are aware of being. So that's the question of identity and time, which I think comes up again and again in the film.
I was speaking to German filmmaker Philipp Gröning. Following his meeting with the artist, Pope Benedict received in audience the leader of the Anglican Communion, Archbishop Rowan Williams. It was the first meeting between the two men since the Vatican set up last month a new apostolic constitution, a formal structure making it easier for disaffected Anglicans to convert to Catholicism.
In a statement released afterwards by the Holy See's press office, the Vatican said the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury reiterated the shared will to move ahead towards closer ecumenical relations. It said their discussions were cordial and also focused on recent events between the Catholic Church and the Anglican Communion. My colleague Philippa Hitchin spoke to Archbishop Williams in an exclusive interview after his meeting with the Pope in the Vatican. She began by asking him what was the message he brought to the Pope.
Naturally, I wanted to express some of the concerns about the way in which the announcement of the Constitution had been handled and received, because clearly many Anglicans, myself included, felt that it put us in an awkward position for a time. Not the content so much as some of the messages that were given out. So I needed to share with the Pope some of those concerns, and I think those were expressed and heard in a very friendly spirit.
What was his reaction? What was the message that you received from him?
The main message, I think, was that the Constitution did not represent any change in the Vatican's attitude to the Anglican Communion as such. And a very strong statement came out, and he said that personally, but also it came out in the official statement from the meeting, that the next round of official talks, the archic procedure, should go on, that he wished to see that continue.
And yet, as you say, many Anglicans were quite dismayed at the move, which they see as a way of attracting converts rather than advancing this dialogue. What do you say to reassure them?
I would say that, first of all, the presentation of the Constitution as a kind of dawn raid on the Anglican Communion misunderstands the process that happened and the actual nature of the Constitution. People become Roman Catholics because they want to become Roman Catholics, because their consciences are formed in a certain way and they believe this is the will of God for them. And I wish them every blessing in that. But I don't think it's a question of, you know, the Roman Catholic Church, as it were, trying to attract by advertising or by special offers. I don't see that as the purpose at all. And in that sense, I don't particularly worry about it.
In your address at the Gregorian University, you asked some really quite provocative questions about the future of the dialogue, challenging Catholics to reconsider obstacles such as women's ordination and the exercise of papal primacy in the light of progress made over the past 40 years. What do you think are the chances of those challenges being taken very seriously here?
I think that if we now do proceed towards the third phase of the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission, there's a very strong chance that many of these issues will be on the table, because, of course, they are the unfinished business of what we've done so far. The possibility that the next round will look at the relation between the local and the universal church, for instance, raises, as I hinted in my lecture, both the question of primacy as it's currently exercised and the question of the decision-making liberty of the local church on matters that are not central. So I think, yes, these are precisely the issues that we need to go on talking about.
You're also suggesting that the Anglican Communion could perhaps be a model for the Catholic Church in the way that it's organised. And yet, as you know, many Catholics believe it's hard to make any progress in the dialogue when there are so many contrasting views within the Anglican Communion. What do you say to them?
I'd say that the Roman Catholic Church is not wholly without contrasting views either. But I'd say that what we're doing at the moment in the Anglican Communion is honestly trying to find a structure of universal mutual responsibility which is not controlled by a single executive. And of course this is hard work. Nobody expects it to be anything else. I don't think that what we have achieved is something we can hold up and proudly say everybody ought to be like this. But I would like to say that perhaps the agenda we're trying to set is something that should be shared.
That was the Anglican leader, Archbishop Rowan Williams, speaking to Philippa Hitchin. Well, that's all from Vatican Radio's English programme for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. Laudato Jesus Christus.